The charge at Bozo's lodging house was 9 pence a night. It was a large, crowded place, with accommodation for 500 men, and a well-known rendezvous of tramps, beggars, and petty criminals. All races, even black and white, mixed in it on terms of equality. There were Indians there, and when I spoke to one of them in bad Urdu, he addressed me as Tum, a thing to make one shudder if it had been in India. We'd got below the range of colour prejudice. One had glimpses of curious lives. Old Grandpa, a tramp of 70 who made his living or a great part of it by collecting cigarette ends and selling the tobacco at 3 pence an ounce. The doctor, he was a real doctor who'd been struck off the register for some offence, and besides selling newspapers gave medical advice at a few pence a time. A little Chittagonian Lascar, barefoot and starving, who had deserted his ship and wandered for days through London, so vague and helpless that he did not even know the name of the city he was in. He thought it was Liverpool until I told him. A begging letter writer, a friend of Bozo's, who wrote pathetic appeals for aid to pay for his wife's funeral, and when a letter had taken effect, blew himself out with huge solitary gorges of bread and margarine. He was a nasty, hyena-like creature. I talked to him and found that, like most swindlers, he believed a great part of his own lies. The lodging house was an Alsatia for types like these. While I was with Bozo, he taught me something about the technique of London begging. There is more in it than one might suppose. Beggars vary greatly, and there is a sharp social line between those who merely cadge and those who attempt to give some value for money. The amounts that one can earn by the different gags also vary. The stories in the Sunday papers about beggars who die with £2,000 sewn into their trousers are, of course, lies, but the better-class beggars do have runs of luck when they earn a living wage for weeks at a time. The most prosperous beggars are street acrobats and street photographers. On a good pitch, a theatre queue for instance, a street acrobat will often earn £5 a week. Street photographers can earn about the same, but they are dependent on fine weather. They have a cunning dodge to stimulate trade. When they see a likely victim approaching, one of them runs behind the camera and pretends to take a photograph. Then, as the victim reaches them, they exclaim, "There you are, sir. Took your photo lovely. That'll be a bob." "But I never asked you to take it," protests the victim. "What, you didn't want it took? Why, we thought you signalled with your hand." "Well, there's a plate wasted. That's cost us 6 pence, that has." At this, the victim usually takes pity and says he will have the photo after all. The photographers examine the plate and say that it is spoiled and that they will take a fresh one free of charge. Of course, they've not really taken the first photo, and so, if the victim refuses, they waste nothing. Organ grinders, like acrobats, are considered artists rather than beggars. An organ grinder named Shorty, a friend of Bozo's, told me all about his trade. He and his mate worked the coffee shops and public houses round Whitechapel and the Commercial Road. It is a mistake to think that organ grinders earn their living in the street. 9/10 of their money is taken in coffee shops and pubs, only the cheap pubs, for they are not allowed into the good class ones. Shorty's procedure was to stop outside a pub and play one tune, after which his mate, who had a wooden leg and could excite compassion, went in and passed round the hat. It was a point of honour with Shorty always to play another tune after receiving the drop, an encore, as it were, the idea being that he was a genuine entertainer and not merely paid to go away. He and his mate took £2 or £3 a week between them, but as they had to pay 15 shillings a week for the hire of the organ, they only averaged £1 a week each. They were on the streets from 8 in the morning till 10 at night, and later on Saturdays. Screevers can sometimes be called artists, sometimes not. Bozo introduced me to one who was a real artist, that is, he had studied art in Paris and submitted pictures to the Salon in his day. His line was copies of old masters, which he did marvellously, considering that he was drawing on stone. He told me how he began as a screever. "My wife and kids were starving. I was walking home late at night with a lot of drawings I've been taking round the dealers and wondering how the devil to raise a bob or two. Then in the Strand I saw a fellow kneeling on the pavement drawing, and people giving him pennies. As I came past, he got up and went into a pub, and damn it, I thought, if he can make money at that, so can I. So on the impulse, I knelt down and began drawing with his chalks. Heaven knows how I came to do it. I must have been light-headed with hunger. The curious thing was that I'd never used pastels before. I had to learn the technique as I went along. Well, people began to stop and say that my drawing wasn't bad, and they gave me ninepence between them. At this moment, the other fellow came out of the pub. "What in God's name are you doing on my patch?" he said. I explained that I was hungry and had to earn something. "Oh," said he, "come and have a pint with me." So I had a pint, and since that day I've been a screever. I make £1 a week. You can't keep 6 kids on £1 a week, but luckily my wife earns a bit taking in sewing. The worst thing in this life is the cold, and the next worst is the interference you have to put up with. First, not knowing any better, I used sometimes to copy a nude on the pavement. First I did was outside St. Martin's in the Fields Church. A fellow in black, I suppose he was a church warden or something, came out in a tearing rage. "Do you think we can have that obscenity outside God's holy house?" he cried, so I had to wash it out. It was a copy of Botticelli's Venus. Another time I copied the same picture on the embankment. A policeman passing looked at it and then, without a word, walked onto it and rubbed it out with his great flat feet. Bozo told the same tale of police interference. At the time when I was with him, there had been a case of immoral conduct in Hyde Park, in which the police had behaved rather badly. Bozo produced a cartoon of Hyde Park with policemen concealed in the trees and the legend, "Puzzle, find the policeman." I pointed out to him how much more telling it would be to put, "Puzzle, find the immoral conduct," but Bozo would not hear of it. He said that any policeman who saw it would move him on, and he would lose his pitch for good. Below screevers come the people who sing hymns, or sell matches, or bootlaces, or envelopes containing a few grains of lavender, called, euphemistically, perfume. All these people are frankly beggars, exploiting an appearance of misery, and none of them takes on an average more than half a crown a day. The reason why they have to pretend to sell matches and so forth instead of begging outright is that this is demanded by the absurd English law about begging. As the law now stands, if you approach a stranger and ask him for tuppence, he can call a policeman and get you 7 days for begging. But if you make the air hideous by droning "Nearer, my God, to thee," or scrawl some chalk daubs on the pavement, or stand about with a tray of matches, in short, if you make a nuisance of yourself, you are held to be following a legitimate trade and not begging. Match selling and street singing are simply legalized crimes, not profitable crimes, however. There is not a singer or match seller in London who could be sure of £50 a year, a poor return for standing 84 hours a week on the curb with the cars grazing your backside. It is worth saying something about the social position of beggars, for when one has consorted with them and found that they are ordinary human beings, one cannot help being struck by the curious attitude that society takes towards them. People seem to feel that there is some essential difference between beggars and ordinary working men. They are a race apart, outcasts, like criminals and prostitutes. Working men work. Beggars do not work. They are parasites, worthless in their very nature. It is taken for granted that a beggar does not earn his living as a bricklayer or a literary critic earns his. He is a mere social excrescence, tolerated, because we live in a humane age, but essentially despicable. Yet if one looks closely, one sees that there is no essential difference between a beggar's livelihood and that of numberless respectable people. Beggars do not work, it is said, but then, what is work? A navvy works by swinging a pick, an accountant works by adding up figures. A beggar works by standing out of doors in all weathers and getting varicose veins, chronic bronchitis, etc. It is a trade like any other, quite useless, of course, but then many reputable trades are quite useless. And as a social type, a beggar compares well with scores of others. He is honest compared with the sellers of most patent medicines, high-minded compared with a Sunday newspaper proprietor, amiable compared with a hire purchase tout, in short, a parasite, but a fairly harmless parasite. He seldom extracts more than a bare living from the community, and what should justify him according to our ethical ideas, he pays for it over and over in suffering. I do not think there is anything about a beggar that sets him in a different class from other people, or gives most modern men the right to despise him. Then the question arises, why are beggars despised? For they are despised, universally. I believe it is for the simple reason that they fail to earn a decent living. In practice, nobody cares whether work is useful or useless, productive or parasitic. The sole thing demanded is that it shall be profitable. In all the modern talk about energy, efficiency, social service and the rest of it, what meaning is there except get money, get it legally, and get a lot of it? Money has become the grand test of virtue. By this test, beggars fail, and for this, they are despised. If one could earn even £10 a week at begging, it would become a respectable profession immediately. A beggar, looked at realistically, is simply a businessman, getting his living, like other businessmen, in the way that comes to hand. He has not, more than most modern people, sold his honour. He has merely made the mistake of choosing a trade at which it is impossible to grow rich.